21-1785, Alexam Incorporated against MasterCard International Incorporated. Mr. Carter.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I am counsel to the plaintiff appellant, who is the patentee licensor here, Alexam, which signed an agreement with MasterCard to license Alexam's patent and give MasterCard a broad covenant not to sue, but which required MasterCard to pay royalties and which provided for the exclusive forum for disputes under that agreement. We ask this court very respectfully to reverse summary judgment against Alexam in the district court against its breach of contract royalty claims because it was based upon the application of judicial estoppel, and that application was a legal error and abuse of discretion. Judicial estoppel is reserved to cases where a party reverses or takes a position that is entirely irreconcilable with a former position that has been approved in a prior proceeding, and the doing of that causes prejudice to the system or impugns judicial integrity. That is the opposite of what occurred here. The magistrate judge, in reviewing the motion for summary judgment, got it right at Appendix 147 when he said that the flaw in MasterCard's argument is that Alexam never contended before the PTAB that the covenant not to sue precluded its breach of contract claim, and the PTAB never held that it did. On the contrary, the position taken by Alexam, which is laid out at pages 1491 through 1494 or so of the appendix, contained its response to MasterCard's assertion about the covenant not to sue, as well as its response to the board's request about the covenant not to sue.
Counsel, and, didn't Alexam also have another paper that they filed? If I remember correctly, it's at page 448 to 50 of the record. There's two briefs before the PTO on this issue, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's correct.
You know, I noticed that MasterCard emphasizes one particular sentence in your second brief before the PTO, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to respond to it. And the sentence that they quote multiple times is found on page appendix 1492, and it's the CNS also is sufficient to moot a claim for declaratory relief. Would you like to explain what you think that sentence means in the context of your entire brief?
Well, the entire brief, of course, is a response to the patent trial, the PTAB request for clarification from the parties, and so it is addressing what the CNS, the covenant not to sue, addresses. That sentence can't be cherry-picked out of context. There are three or four pages there where Alexam explains that it sued MasterCard for breach of contract for royalty damages and that the covenant not to sue serves as a bar to the petitioner's standing at the PTAB because it applies to the patent infringement claims, but not to the contract claim to pay royalties. It says, for example, on page 1492 in Alexam's brief, that the payment of royalties is petitioner's obligation under the license agreement, not a condition of the CNS. Petitioner's intentional and admitted refusal to pay royalties to those supports a claim for breach, but not patent infringement. And then if you turn to page 1493, it says, Alexam said, the party's license agreement contains a covenant not to sue. On the one hand, it was included to provide petitioner with assurance it would not be sued for patent infringement. On the other hand, patent owner intended to enter into a license agreement and have the ability to enforce its terms. So the brief that Your Honor is referring to is one that throughout makes the opposite of the point that MasterCard is attempting to argue from that cherry-picked sentence. It has simply never been the case, and we laid this out throughout our red brief, I think, on several pages, that Alexam has ever contended that the covenant not to sue barred its royalty claim. It has consistently argued in the district court before the PTAB, at the PTAB and afterwards, that the covenant not to sue bars Alexam from bringing a patent infringement claim, but not a claim for royalties due under the license agreement.
Except the covenant not to sue says for any claim or alleged liabilities of any kind and nature at law, in equity or otherwise, and there's further language. That does not sound limited to patent infringement.
One of our complaints, Your Honor, is that the covenant not to sue has not been construed by the district court according to canons of statutory of contract construction. The covenant not to sue isn't the only provision of that agreement, and under familiar canons of contract construction, all provisions of an agreement must be reconciled so as to render none of them superfluous. The construction that MasterCard urges, to which you refer, that the covenant not to sue would actually negate the royalties clause in the same agreement is just exactly that kind of provision that this rule of construction applies to, so that it cannot be construed to bar a claim for the royalties given in the very same contract.
That issue decided by the court below. You say they haven't. Did they decide, did the district court look at the scope of the CNS, or instead its decision was just based on estoppel, based on statements made to the PTO?
That's correct, Your Honor. Judge Stoll, the district court had two decisions. I referred to the magistrate judge's report and recommendation and then to the district judge's decision rejecting that report and recommendation. The report and recommendation, as I said a moment ago, got it right when it said that that MasterCard is wrong, that Alexam never contended that the covenant not to sue precluded its breach of contract claim. And then Judge Lurie just asked a question about the apparent breadth of the language of that covenant not to sue to see whether the covenant bars the royalty claim. But the district court didn't base its decision on the language of the covenant. It based its decision on a recharacterization, I would put it, of the position actually taken by Alexam in the PTAB. And so far as we have seen, there's not a case of judicial estoppel that uses that device, that takes what was actually argued, sets it aside, recharacterizes it, calls it the functional equivalent of something, much less where the result of doing that is to turn it into the opposite of what was argued. The consistent argument has been here that in the bargain for exchange of this license agreement, Alexam gave up the right to bring a patent infringement claim, gave up the right to seek an injunction to exclude MasterCard from the market, to visit on MasterCard the risk of loss of any of its business. And therefore, you know, for those reasons, the arguments about MedImmune already are also incorrect. But as to judicial estoppel, the court exceeds the bounds of its discretion when it leaves aside the legal rules for the application of that doctrine, which have to do with changing positions in order to take an unfair advantage. Since there was no change of position here, Judge Stoll, the court should have construed the contract, should have looked at it and determined whether the contract covenant not to sue barred either Alexam's royalties claim, which would be an absurd result, or MasterCard's affirmative counterclaims or affirmative defenses based upon invalidity or infringement. It simply cannot manufacture for those counterclaims subject matter jurisdiction because it has a very broad covenant not to sue, pursuant to which it does not realistically face the risk of an infringement claim, wasn't sued for infringement at the time the case was brought, hasn't been sued for infringement since the time the case was brought. There has simply never been any reason why MasterCard would have standing under MedImmune because although royalties were sought, no injunction could be sought, and infringement action had never been filed and was not threatened. Do I still have the line? Hello?
Yes. Still here. Yes.
I just afraid we might have lost the line.
We're still listening.
That's very good. So, you know, Your Honors, I would refer you to a case that came out right about the time, just before the red brief was filed. It's your decision in a case called Canoe versus Samsung. And in Canoe versus Samsung, and I just got the slip of the name up in front of me. It looks like it's page 11. This court, you may recall, was dealing with a forum selection clause in a nondisclosure agreement and whether or not that applied to infringement claims brought to an IPR proceeding. And the issue on judicial estoppel in that case was whether Samsung had taken clearly irreconcilable positions, arguing in one other case that the forum selection clause was extremely broad, but arguing in the present case that it was very narrow and therefore didn't apply to bar its PTAB proceedings, that petition. And, you know, this court quoted the Second Circuit in the Apple case, which in turn quoted the Supreme Court in New Hampshire case for the three components of what judicial estoppel requires, and emphasized in its quote that relief is granted only when the impact on judicial integrity is certain. And in quoting the Second Circuit's standard, the first prong is that the courts typically consider whether the party's argument is clearly inconsistent with its earlier position. I submit that it's impossible to be clearly inconsistent with an earlier position if it is exactly the same position in both cases that has been urged, and that is what we have here. We have clearly demonstrated by reference to the record at the PTAB and indeed to the record before the district court prior to the PTAB that Alexam's position here is that contract claims for royalty damages are owed, but that Alexam, unlike perhaps the usual licensor patentee, had given up the right to exclude, given up the right to bring an infringement action. And faced with that, there was no basis for the counterclaim that was asserted in the district court. There was no basis for the petition in the PTAB that MasterCard asserted. And as a result, the application of judicial estoppel was wrong, and the district court erred in granting summary judgment, taking, by the way, no inferences in favor of Alexam and all inferences about the scope of the covenant and the position taken in the PTAB against the non-movement, which is an additional basis to recognize that summary judgment here was error.
Well, let me ask you just one final question about the whole threshold, and it's come up before in this colloquy, that it looks as if the agreement between the parties included an agreement not to sue for anything, including suing for unpaid royalties. And unless we can cross that that barrier, we really don't even get to the other issues.
A couple of comments in response. I understand the question. First, it's not for this court, I submit, to interpret as a matter of state law canons of contract construction. For the first time,
let's assume that it is, because I think you know that we could, of course, send this to the state court to interpret it for us. However, I do believe the protocol for decades in the Federal Circuit is to proceed with the case, and if state law needs to be applied, we'll apply it.
I'm sorry, that wasn't my point, Your Honor, but I do understand yours. Judge Newman, my point is that the district court here never engaged in state law canons of contract construction interpretation of the covenant not to sue. Had it done so, and I submit that if this court were to do so, you would apply the standard that I referred to earlier with Judge Lurie, that no provision of a contract should be construed to be meaningless, and that all provisions should be read harmoniously. In the very same document, indeed, opposite pages of the same document, pages 3 and 4, there is both a covenant not to sue and a royalty provision. the construction that you're suggesting that the covenant not to sue applies to royalties claims would render the royalty provision nugatory. And it was the only, and principal, obviously, principal term, but the only economic term of the agreement. So that would be an erroneous application of the canons of contract construction. A correct one would be to say that the covenant bars all claims except those arising from this agreement, such as the breach of the royalty provision. I see my time has expired, unless there's any other questions.
Okay, anything else at the moment for counsel?
No.
No.
All right, then we'll hear from Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I proceed?
Yes, proceed.
May it please the court. Alex Sam here made many arguments to the PTAB. Two are particularly important. First, it told the PTAB that it couldn't sue MasterCard for patent infringement because of the license agreement. The second argument it made was that it was the covenant not to sue was sufficient to moot a claim for declaratory relief. It is the second argument there that is the problem for Alex Sam. If it hadn't made that second argument, we likely would have been in the PTAB, proceeding with the covered business method review as MasterCard had asked for. But instead, Alex Sam made this argument about the scope of the covenant not to sue. They told the PTAB that that covenant not to sue was sufficient to moot MasterCard's claim for declaratory relief.
Counsel, this is Judge Stoll. I see the sentence you're referring to. It's on page A1492. But what about the sentences that precede that and follow it in context? What they're saying there is that the there can be no that there's a support for a claim for breach, but not patent infringement. They say that multiple times before and after the sentence you're referring to. I agree that the sentence you're referring to sounds very broad, but they never say that there's no right to claim for a breach. They're simply talking about they cannot sue for patent infringement.
Right. I mean, like I said, Judge Stoll, I think they make two arguments here. One, I agree. They think that...
So wait, just to be clear. So even though the sentence, you know, one sentence above the sentence you're referring to says that expressly, that you still think this is a separate second argument, this one sentence that says the CNS also is sufficient to moot a claim for declaratory relief?
Yes, and I think it...
What if I disagree with you? Do you have anything else you're relying on besides this sentence? Because I have to say, I don't see where you're citing anything else in your brief.
Well, we could look... I mean, the PTAB's analysis of this issue is fulsome. They go on at significant length and explicitly rely on the arguments that the patent owner had made. So, for instance, if you look at...
That's a separate issue, right? So the one question is whether they've taken inconsistent positions, and another question is whether the PTO relied on the inconsistent position, right?
It is.
You're not pointing me to where the PTO relied on the inconsistent position. I'm asking you, do you have any other evidence that an inconsistent position was taken? We can move to the PTO's analysis in a minute.
Sure.
But I want to make sure that you stay on track for me and that you understand my question.
No, and I think this has to be the inconsistent position. I mean, it's clear from MedImmune that on the facts we had, in the absence of a covenant not to sue, MasterCard had the right to a covered business method review. It's clear as day in MedImmune, these are exactly the facts that MedImmune had. You've got a license agreement. You've got the patentee asserting royalties under a license agreement that are disputed. And the licensee says, I'm entitled to a declaration that I don't owe royalties for these transactions and that the patent is invalid to the extent that I do. Those are the exact facts we had here. And if Alex Sam had not made this argument that it makes in this sentence, I mean, I recognize it's just one sentence, but it's extremely important. Without that argument, we would have been in the PTAB because it's clear under MedImmune MasterCard would be entitled to that proceeding. And instead, it's because of this argument, the one that the PTAB focused on in its analysis, that it stripped MasterCard of the right to covered business method review.
Okay, let's look at the PTAB. I understand, and I understand the weight you're giving this one sentence. So let's turn to the PTO's decision and show me where they emphasize this, the importance of this.
Right, so there's a couple places. I'll start on appendix page 1522.
Okay.
Just kind of with their conclusion, and I'll point you to footnote 4 at the bottom of that page, the last sentence. In contrast, in determining whether a petitioner has met the standing requirement to initiate this CBM review, we have interpreted the license agreement, paren, including the covenant not to sue, in paren, as part of our analysis to determine the petitioner has not been charged with infringement by patent owner. So this covenant was clearly the key bit. You know, we can then go back and look in more detail at its analysis, which starts a few pages earlier on page 1519. They say, on page 1519, quote, we find that the broad language of the covenant not to sue provision and the license agreement removes any imminent possibility that MasterCard, that patent owner could bring an infringement action against petitioner. It goes on to find that the language of that covenant is so broad that it's not conditioned on the payment of royalties, that it couldn't be.
Which page are you looking at right now? I'm at footnote 4, and I apologize.
All right, sure.
What page?
I'll back up. I was starting on page 1519.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Top of that page, let's begin there. So the PTAB here notes that patent owner in its supplemental response asserts that the covenant not to sue is further evidence that patent owner cannot sue petitioner for infringement. And, right, a second argument, it is just another reason why petitioner lacks standing. So again, here the PTAB is keying in on this covenant not to sue as the reason that MasterCard is not able to proceed in the PTAB. And then bottom of 1519, they begin their analysis with the terms of the covenant, and they say they've taken into account the party's submissions, and they find that the broad language of the covenant not to sue provision removes any imminent possibility the patent owner could bring an infringement action against petitioner. And it goes on to, for the next page or two, to walk through the various arguments about the scope of this patent license agreement, the covenant not to sue of the patent license agreement, you know, ultimately culminating in the section I just showed you in footnote 4. So all of that is clearly, there's just no, based on the PTAB's actual analysis here, right, it is clear that they relied on the scope of this covenant not to sue to strip MasterCard of its right to the covered business method review. And importantly,
do you think they relied on the scope of the covenant not to sue with respect to even the ability to sue for royalties based on breach of contract, or were they interpreting it based on infringement? For example, if I look at the board's regulations about what's required for standing to seek CBM review, there's some language there that's pretty key, and it says, charged with infringement means a real and substantial controversy regarding infringement of a covered business method exists. Such a petitioner would have standing to bring a declaratory judgment in federal court. It's not having standing to bring a declaratory judgment action for breach of contract. It's or for validity. It's talking. Well, I guess it is for validity. But it the way this sentence ties it to infringement, does that make it so the PTO's statement about, hey, we understand the district court not to have reached the issue we address here, means that they aren't, in fact, relying on anything other than infringement and not relying on the ability to bring a breach of contract to.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I think two things are important to point out. So first, at page 1520 of the PTAB's decision in footnote 3, they're explicit about this. They say, we need not and do not address the question of whether patent owner's breach of contract claim in the New York action itself violates the covenant not to sue. They realize that this is a potential issue. They explicitly leave that open for the district court to decide what to do about, which the district court did. The second thing I would point out is that in the opinion, the PTAB, in terms of what that actual regulation means, we could certainly have an interesting discussion about it. I think it's entirely irrelevant to this case because the PTAB itself told us how it was interpreting it. So page 1516 of the opinion, the PTAB points out, analyzing the regulation, which I think you were just reading from 42.302A, they say, the foregoing regulation has made it, quote, clear that it is the ability to seek relief in federal court that is important to the standing inquiry, unquote. And they're quoting there from this court's return mail decision. And so they say, in our analysis, we've considered this case law addressing when a party might have Article III standing to bring a declaratory judgment action. And then they start with MedImmune, which, of course, is the exact case on point from the Supreme Court. So they've interpreted this regulation in terms of what it means to be charged with infringement. Remember, the statute is broader than just sued for infringement. It's sued or charged. And so the PTAB has interpreted what charged means with its regulations, and then it's further explained how it understood that regulation in this opinion, which is to say it goes to the question of what standing under the Declaratory Judgment Act, or under Article 3 for declaratory judgment, would be applying the federal case law. So that's why MedImmune is directly on point. Given those facts, MasterCard, as I pointed out, would have had the ability to seek a covered business method review had it not been for this covenant. I think I answered the question you're asking, Judge Stoll, but if not, let me know.
You did. You did. What about they have to be clearly inconsistent positions? What is your view on that? I mean, you're reading a lot into a sentence.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not – okay, first of all, let me just back up and remind the court what the standard review here is. The question is, did Judge Glasser abuse his discretion in applying these factors? And you know, we have to keep in mind several things in judicial estoppel when answering that question. First is, there is no rigid formula for judicial estoppel. The Supreme Court made that clear in New Hampshire versus Maine. It obviously talked about some factors that are typical, and it applied them, but it was very clear that there is no rigid rule, so we shouldn't be looking for some inflexible requirement that set in stone. The key inquiry in any judicial estoppel inquiry is to decide, as a matter of essentially looking at the integrity of the judicial system, has one party put a second court in a position where it would have to, in some sense, impeach the first court's ruling in order to resolve a case? And it's the desire to avoid that leads to judicial estoppel, right? The argument is we don't want to create a mess.
Is the question, though, here, which is, you know, there's a factual conclusion or fact finding, I should say, that there were inconsistent positions taken. Now, I review that for whether it's clearly erroneous, right?
Well, I mean, in the course of deciding whether the judge abused his discretion, you would need to ask whether he made an error of law. I mean, I agree with that. If that's
First, there's a question: an abuse of discretion can be made by making an error of law, or it can be made by making a clearly erroneous fact finding, right?
Yeah, fair enough. And so here, I mean, certainly Judge Glasser articulated the standard correctly. I mean, appendix page 44, he says, doctrine of judicial estoppel applies where a party's position is clearly inconsistent with its earlier position. So he certainly understood the correct standard as it exists, you know, today, and he applied it repeatedly. And for instance, in appendix page 51 in his decision in footnote 17, he finds that all three elements are satisfied and that Alexam advocated inconsistent positions by demanding royalties under the license agreement while insisting that MasterCard did not have standing. So he found those positions to be the clearly inconsistent positions, and that decision is clearly correct. Under MedImmune, we had the ability to bring a covered business method review action on these facts. It was stripped from us. The only way it could have been, and the way it actually was by arguing that this covenant not to sue was so broad as to prevent Alexam from seeking those disputed royalties. So that is the clearly inconsistent position. Judge Glasser correctly found that those positions were inconsistent and relied on them in finding that Alexam was now stopped from seeking these royalties. I mean, and I would just point out, in response to the discussion by my counterpart earlier about the difficulty of construing this covenant not to sue and the desire to have the district court do some fulsome analysis, this is exactly what judicial estoppel is meant to prevent. The PTAB did the analysis that is being requested. It was because of that analysis that the covered business method review was denied. You can't now go back to the district court and have the district court construe that covenant in a different way. That is precisely what the judicial estoppel doctrine acts to prevent, and there's many cases where sort of similar facts have applied to prevent this kind of second look at the argument that was already accepted in the prior decision. New Hampshire versus Maine is such an example, where having convinced the court to accept one interpretation of a prior judicial document, we'll call it, although I think it was actually a finding from King George II, and benefited from that interpretation, there was a judicial estoppel applied against the state in that case, which was...
But there was no explicit argument or holding that the reasonable interpretation of the covenant not to sue means that we're not going to sue you for royalties if you decide not to pay us. I don't recall any discussion of royalties in that proceeding. It was entirely validity or infringement, was it not?
Well, New Hampshire case was not a patent case at all. But you're right that I'm not aware of a situation where that particular argument was made in the case law, and instead what we have generally in the case law is broad covenants taking place in the context where there is no prior license agreement. So,
well, I'm looking at this case and at the substance, the subject matter, that which is where the issue is whether or not estoppel arose. So let's stick with this case.
Yeah, well, in this case, the covenant not to sue is broad. It's not limited to infringement actions. And that's the language, and it's because of that that the PTAB found MasterCard could not bring a covered business method review action. If there was such a distinction, if the covenant not to sue were limited to claims for patent infringement, this would be a much different case because there would have been no way to strip MasterCard of its right to bring a covered business method.
Well, neither of those issues is before us. What's before us is unpaid royalties only.
Well, sorry, can I finish my answer, Your
Honor? Please proceed.
Yes. I would say what's before the court now is the district court's decision to invoke judicial estoppel to prevent Alexam from collecting royalties after having told the PTAB that this
yes, that's the question.
So broad. Yes.
And I'm trying to find in the decision or argument that said to invoke the estoppel where they argued that we also gave up the right to royalties.
Right. Well, so what they said is that the covenant not to sue is sufficient to moot a claim for declaratory relief. The under controlling law, that has only one meaning, which is that MasterCard cannot be forced to pay disputed royalties. Because if MasterCard can be forced to pay disputed royalties, there is a declaratory relief claim, and therefore MasterCard can bring the covered business method review. So that is the inconsistency in the argument Alexam made. It is one that's based on the context of controlling law. Remember that judicial estoppel is all about context. You have to look at the statement in the context it was made. Here it was made in a very clear context to strip MasterCard of the relief that it would be entitled to under MedImmune. And it's for that reason that the district court judge correctly exercised its discretion in holding Alexam to that position and precluding it from collecting those disputed royalties.
Okay. Any more questions for counsel?
No.
No.
Okay, and we have rebuttal. Mr. Carter?
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Let me begin with the assertion that the court first took up with my friend, that the phrase that this covenant not to sue is sufficient to moot declaratory relief in Alexam's submission to the PTAB. I think it's by now very clear that's out of context with respect to the rest of the context of the rest of the content of the submissions actually made. The question came up about an error of law is abuse of discretion, but so is a clearly erroneous fact-finding. If it were to be characterized as a fact-finding by the district court that Alexam's position were that the covenant reaches breach of royalty, breach of contract royalty claims, or is sufficient to moot any claim whatsoever for any matter whatsoever, that would be a clearly erroneous factual finding. I think this court can be comfortable with that. There's no need to look beyond the written record before the PTAB and its own ruling. There's no need to deal with things like interpretation of the credibility of witnesses or inferences. That would be a clearly erroneous fact finding. But that's not what was said there. What the error seems to be here is that MasterCard argues that when you sue for royalties, you necessarily trigger standing to bring a DJ claim for invalidity or non-infringement. But at the same time, they argue that but for the covenant not to sue, this case would be like MedImmune. We contend, as you know from our papers, that the district court erred in saying this case is the same as MedImmune. It is not. MedImmune uses the phrase totality of circumstances to describe the Supreme Court's standing determination, standard for standing determinations. And this set of circumstances, unlike MedImmune, includes a covenant not to sue that is written very broadly. Indeed, this license agreement contains provisions for enforcement. It contains a choice of forum clause, for example. Those are clearly meant for something to be enforced, and the principal, the only economic term in the license agreement is the royalty provision. So that takes us out of MasterCard's argument that the covenant not to sue doesn't alter the mix in comparing our case with MedImmune. Unless the court has other questions for me, I think those are the points I wanted principally to respond to. But I do think that it bears emphasis, based on Judge Stoll's colloquy with my friend, to review pages 1519 through 1521 of the appendix. That's the section of the PTAB's decision entitled Analysis of Covenant Not to Sue. It starts out, we begin our analysis with the terms of the covenant. Having taken into consideration the party's submissions, we find that the broad language of the covenant not to sue provision in the license agreement removes any imminent possibility that patent owner could bring an infringement action against petitioner. May I conclude?
Yes, finish your sentence, please.
Yes, just pointing out that footnote 3 was cited to you, and footnote 3 is where the patent, where the PTAB clearly says it's not addressing anything beyond and agreeing with any argument beyond the covenant's effect on patent infringement claims. So there is no inconsistent positions between the cases. We respectfully request that this court reverse the order of summary judgment and remand for further proceedings not inconsistent with its ruling.
Okay, any more questions for Mr. Carter?
No.
No.
Okay, thank you. Again, thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under submission.